Good afternoon, everyone. In regards to the hashtag, I was also looking at Twitter the other day, and it said, there's a quote from Margaret Thatcher, I'm not sure if it's true or not, it's Twitter, it said that normal people travel on buses, roads and trains, and economists travel on infrastructure. Anyway, if that's a nice joke for us to start the afternoon, there you go. Can I acknowledge the special guest? Can I acknowledge Jane from the RAA and Charles and everyone else from the RAA who's here today, and certainly to Bradley and the Cedar crew for having me along, to Michael from Shoal for sponsoring the day, to my fellow panel members, especially my good mate Professor Rocco Zito, helping to make our world autonomous one driverless car trial at a time. Ladies and gentlemen, guests, thank you very much for coming along to hear me. And I get scared at speaking in front of a room like this because I'm sure that all of you in this room are actually much more experienced and smarter than me, but the way our democratic system works, a politician gets to be a minister. So I'll attempt to outline where we are and then look forward to getting involved in the panel later on. We have now, after much anticipation, delivered our first budget, and I think it's fair to say that before the election there was some consternation amongst some different sections of the political class that there was a valley of death looming on the horizon. And it was fair to say that looking at the books pre this budget, that 2021 and 2022 and the out years did have a nadir of concern, I think is what we chose to call it. And we've worked very assiduously together with the federal government to be able to fill that pipeline. And I'll get to some of the challenges around that at the moment, especially in relation to the budget that we took, well, the election promises that we took to the election. But to brag about all the money of yours that we're spending on very good infrastructure projects, in this budget, over the 4 years, we're spending $11.3 billion on infrastructure. From a macro sense, that's $500 million plus more than what was spent last year. It is an absolute record. And over the course of the 4 years, we're spending on average $250 million more than the 17-18 year. This is a government that believes in building the productive infrastructure for our future. And some of the projects that we're spending it on in relation to this financial year, $2.3 billion on roads, $1.3 billion on education, $1.2 billion on water infrastructure, $1 billion on public transport, $850-odd million in health facilities, $450-odd in residential housing, and close to $400 helping SA Water to upgrade its electricity generation network so that it has zero net emissions across its network, which is a fantastic feat that over time should deliver household savings for water, you know, water payers, water user payers. But more broadly than that, I think what this budget set out to do is exactly what we said we'd do before the election. And for those who have struggled through our 2036 manifesto, it had very, very clearly in there that we were going to deliver balanced budgets with debt reduction in the longer term. And I think that's exactly what we've delivered. A balanced budget that's had to make some very tough decisions on the operating side of the aisle so that we can keep our operating expenditure in the black, but not being scared to actually spend money on the productive component of our economy. And essentially that creates a bit of a shift from the public sector to the private sector in the way that the spending's going to happen. Instead of a larger public service, we're essentially taking that money and spending it to put into private sector projects where government is going to procure private sector to build infrastructure projects for us. We think that's an extremely good shift, and the only way that we've been able to do it is by being disciplined and making some of the tough calls on the operating side. And I think that's what we'll see going forward, budgets that are in the black, but a government that's not scared to spend on productive infrastructure, understanding that this environment we're in at the moment with low interest rates, it now is a great time to invest. In fact, historically now is one of the best times to invest, notwithstanding the fact that we have to compete with record infrastructure spends from New South Wales and other states. But in putting this budget together, we did have to get the balancing act right. It's no secret that we took an extremely modest infrastructure spending platform to the election. I think we were one-tenth of our opponent's total spend. But it's not because we wanted to spend less, and quite demonstrably now, it's not because we wanted to spend less. It's because we wanted to give ourselves the freedom to make the right decisions rather than the best political decisions. And we took to the election instead a platform around creating a new government bureaucracy called Infrastructure South Australia. And Infrastructure South Australia, a body that exists, a replica body exists in every state except for WA, who I think are going through their process at the moment, essentially saying to the South Australian people, there is a better way of doing things. We should be getting smarter about what it is that we choose to build, and we need some independence that's going to keep governments honest about how we do that. And we know that Infrastructure South Australia is going to, over time, deliver some hard truths to government about what we should be spending our money on, but it's precisely what we need to be doing. And Infrastructure South Australia needs to get its own balance right between being aligned with government priorities enough that it's that government agencies and the cabinet buys into the process, but not so inside government that it can't tell truth to power when it needs to. And the legislation that's currently before the Legislative Council, and I'd enjoy it if they'd hurry up and get it going, but nobody tells the Legislative Council what to do, is that this is a system that we believe marries the best of what the rest of the country has done with their I-bodies and puts us in a position where we're going to get a system that just helps us to deliver better projects from business case development, concept plan development, right through to procurement, to delivery, and then, very importantly, post-project evaluation. And ISA is going to take a little while to get up and running. We've spent $11.3 billion of your money in a budget while we don't have ISA together, and that's where we have needed to find that balance. And we've been very keen to pick infrastructure projects for which there is broad support amongst the community, amongst the industry, within government, and I think the projects that we've chosen to invest in are ones that that in the absence of a formal Infrastructure South Australia body that we can say are good projects to invest in. And whether that be Pym Street to Regency section of the North-South Corridor, whether that's the Joybeloose Bridge, whether that's finishing off the Gawler Line electrification, whether that's finally fixing Port Wakefield and the duplication of the town and the bypass to the north. These are good projects. They've been talked about for a long time. They've been around for a while, and fixing them seemed to us like a very, very good idea. And what we'll do with Infrastructure South Australia is that it's still a couple of years away before it gives us a broad strategic blueprint about what to spend our money on. But in the meantime, in fact, just as importantly as that broad strategic piece, ISA needs to do its work for the existing and the current projects that we're looking to procure. So those functions around quality assurance at each stage along the way, sort of a gateway process, the post-project evaluation, the business case evaluation, those functional processes that ISA will also undertake are desperately needed, and they are things that we can turn on more quickly to make sure that we are procuring and designing and delivering the best infrastructure projects possible. Now, over my time as a minister, something's become quite apparent to me, and there's a whole host of examples that pop their head and have popped their head up over the past 6 months, and that is that the state government especially cannot get away from risk. I think that governments of all persuasions over the past three or four decades have tried to find ways to make the buck stop with somebody else. And each of those iterations, and whether that be privatisation, whether that be different procurement models, whether that be working together with different spheres of government to deliver projects, it always ends up that the state government ends up holding the bag. And I can reference Kangaroo Island Council, who have just built a fantastic airport and decided to undertake that project themselves. Didn't have the balance sheet to support the fact that the project was over budget, and so again came back to state and federal government for more money. And realising that if we were to undermine the viability of Kangaroo Island Council, that we'd be left holding the bag, we accepted the fact that the risk belonged with us. I think we look at the new Royal Adelaide Hospital as a massive exercise in trying to push off risk, and now we realise as a new government that we can't do that, and that at the end of the day the public will hold us accountable. I look, for instance, in relation to public transport across the country, that again, where there's been franchised operations of different modes of public transport, whenever there is a bus strike, for instance, the government is the one that ends up holding the bag. And so I think what I'm trying to say is that in the end, we shouldn't necessarily try to push off risk. We should actually understand it, we should quantify it, we should measure it, and we should be honest with all the partners that we're working with about how we deal with it. And I think it's only by becoming the most smart and informed purchaser and by working openly, honestly and transparently with partners to do all of those things about assessing risk, that we're actually going to get to a better outcome. And this for me rears its head, for instance, in relation to the Torrens project or this fantastic City Tram extension just upstairs about how risk mitigation works in public infrastructure projects. So we are working through what that looks like as a new government, how we, for instance, use procurement models to deliver better outcomes, but also how we deal with skills generation and retention, which I think is extremely important. I think we've worked very hard to deliver a consistent pipeline of projects, not only because we want to show South Australians that we're investing in productive infrastructure, it's also because we want to deliver certainty to the industry. And I think, a bit like Defence, who have realised that the boom-bust cycle doesn't work. In fact, it creates cost that in the end projects need to bear and taxpayers need to bear. We have got a very strong platform about how we generate skills, and our $200 million Skilling Australia Fund that was announced finally last week is a fantastic way to show that we're investing in the skills. But we need to make sure that we've got the projects for people to use those skills. And so for us, delivering a consistent pipeline where we can generate our own skill base here and then make sure that we've got continual work in the infrastructure space for those people is extremely important, especially as we have to compete very hard against an eastern seaboard that is soaking up any spare resource that exists within the system. And lastly, I think one of the other real challenges that we're having to deal with is the fact that this space is changing, and Professor Zito is going to tell us a lot more later on about exactly how. But there are a lot of there's a lot of change that is coming in this space over the next 20 years, 30 years, and these are the horizons, the timeframes over which we as governments need to make our decisions. And in an environment where there is a huge deal of uncertainty, we need to make sure that we're delivering a technology-neutral solution, as technology-neutral a solution as we possibly can. Electronic vehicles are going to change the way that we deliver road infrastructure. There are maths out there that say that 40% of all cars within the next couple of decades are going to be electronic vehicles. That creates a real problem for the federal government because they raise money via a fuel excise that's now going backwards. How do we pay for roads when we no longer get a decent amount of fuel excise? And for instance, how do we make sure that electronic vehicles are paying their fair share for the roads that they use? Now, I look at that one as an exciting opportunity to potentially look at different ways of road user pricing to make sure that there is equity between fuel-based vehicles and electronic vehicles, electric vehicles. But that's a discussion that nationally we're going to have and we're going to have. And I'm actually looking forward to the fact that this advent of new technology is going to create the necessity that the that invention is mothered by and all has always been. We also need to understand how autonomous vehicles and autonomous vehicle technology in public transport is going to change the way that people move from A to B. And I don't know what those answers are. I think there are some people who suggest that all vehicles are going to be autonomous within 40 years. I think there are some people who say that that's not going to happen. I know it's going to involve itself in some way in the way that transport moves. And my pick at this moment, the best guess I would have at this moment, is that anywhere where you're paying someone to sit in a car provides a financial incentive to move to autonomous, well ahead of potentially where private transport may be going. And they're things we're going to have to factor in. How do we make sure that our network is technology neutral enough that when these new technologies come on board, we haven't locked ourselves out? And it's why, for instance, we've made a very different decision about public transport. The former government had a very strong and unashamed hard light rail infrastructure program. And that's fine. People love trams if we make sure that we can get them to work and be delivered on time and on budget. Fantastic idea, but it's a very technology-specific piece of infrastructure. Is that the right way to look at where people are going to move over the next 20 to 30 years? Are there new technologies coming on board? And some of the ideas that members of the public send to me on a daily basis from all over the world tell me that this is the right time for us to sit back, take stock of where things are heading and make sure, not that we pick winners or pick losers, but that our system is permissive. And that's exactly where we want to head with our South Australian Public Transport Authority. It doesn't have an end state in mind. It's essentially saying, instead of the question being, how do we deliver the best light rail network for inner metropolitan South Australia and Adelaide, it's how do we move people the most efficiently from A to B and how do we make sure that new technology can get incorporated into that? These are exciting questions, very difficult questions, and for ones for which there are no easy answers. But at least I think in this instance we're asking the right questions so that we can at least look forward to trying to solve those questions and solve those problems over the coming decades. So it is exciting. I think we've shown a commitment to putting the money on the table. I think we've shown a willingness to try and get to the objective truth when it comes to understanding what we should be spending your money on. And I think that we want to put systems in place that help to keep us honest as this government goes on into its future, hopefully for many, many terms to come. So thank you again for having me along today. I look forward to the panel session afterwards. And just to reiterate to this room that in this new government, people within the infrastructure, construction, design industry all have a place, all have a future, and a government willing to look forward and deliver a more modern and prosperous Adelaide and South Australia. Thank you.